everybody. Welcome to the NCAA show, sponsored by 265 Media. I'm Daniel Artes, the founder of 265 Media. We got a dope panel today. We have K-Dot from Hoopers on Hell. We got Jay Kristen from Jackson Nerds United. We got Will Lyon from the Lyons Den. And we got from the Unlimited Sports Inc. podcast, we got Lawrence Goggins. Brothers, what's going on today, y'all? What's up?
What's going on? Happy to be alive, man.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Ready to make a move.
Yes, sir.
Preserving my chakras, you feel me?
Yes, sir, man. Hey, listen, man. Let's just make sure that we keep our spirits right, man, at all times, y'all, all right?
Yo, always that good energy.
Good energy.
All right, let's get it together, man. Let's get it together. All right, so today we're going to talk about the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight from both men's and women's bracket. Before we did a men's show, then we did a women's show. But now that the games is dying down, we decided to combine them all into one, you know. So basically, we're just going to go right into it. K-Dot, starting with you, man. Let's talk about the Sweet 16 to the Final Four, man. What's on your mind, brother?
Yeah, man. So, I mean, obviously, you know, let's start off on the men's side. I mean, we had a great Sweet 16, great Elite Eight. You know, going into the Final Four, the team that really surprised me, but it shouldn't be too much as of a surprise. Is the number two seed Houston. I mean, their defensive efficiency has been tremendous. I mean, we look at the Sweet 16 game against Syracuse. I mean, they held them to, I believe it was under, I want to say it was under like 30% shooting throughout the game. They had a very, Syracuse had a real tough time, you know, getting easy buckets. They had a real tough time, you know, getting into transition. Houston made them a half court team. And it was something amazing because Syracuse was coming in defensively, you know, holding it down because of that illustrious 2-3 matchup zone. But, you know, that's one team that really surprised me. And then, of course, you know, another team, UCLA, you know, coming in with some heart, some heartbreaking losses to Alabama and then Michigan. UCLA has come in and done a really good job. So those are two teams that I've really taken a look at. I know the others, of course, Gonzaga is going to Gonzaga. You know, and then, you know, Baylor is going to Baylor. But those two teams, UCLA, Houston, they have really come in and shown some amazing things, both on the offensive and surprisingly on the defensive side. So, you know, those are some of the teams that that impressed me on the men's side. Now, I'm going to just throw it to somebody else before we go to the.
Yes, indeed. I just want to say that UCLA's, you know, phenomenal run, being an 11th seed, you know, shout out to Asher Lowe. He said Johnny Juzang and Jamie Jarquez Jr. were going to be two key factors. And those guys have really energized them all the way, making their run. But when you see, even when it's a higher seed, when you see that blue blood name like a UCLA, it's like you see why. It's the pedigree of that team. But I definitely wanted to say that was a team that hot streak, that Cinderella story, that's what I love about the NCAA tournament, because that's all it takes is one team to get hot, especially with the right coaching and the pedigree, you're good to go. But another team that I wanted to touch on was Gonzaga, of course. They're the overwhelming favorite, you know, I feel like, going forward, but everybody's still waiting for that close game to see how do they react under that pressure. So we're going to see what we get from them. But I also want to say Houston is another dark horse to me. I feel like their type of game fits that closed in style when it comes championship time, when it comes half court on the offensive and defensive side. They may have the grittiness to leave that impact and make it to that national championship game. So we got to see.
Who is the hottest team coming into the Final Four And also, who's like the most vulnerable coming into the Final Four for both brackets? And I'll start off first. For me, for the men's bracket, it's basically Gonzaga, man, coming in as the hottest team. They just been making it look so easy, winning, you know, by an average of 24 points per game. The big three of Kispert, Suggs, and Timmy, you know, they have been really good, especially Drew Timmy, who I've been impressed with, man. And though that we know how great Suggs is, and the National Player of the Year finalist, Corey Kispert, has been all season. It's been Drew Timmy this whole tournament that has been impressive to me the most. You know, averaging 25 points a game over the last three games, you know, versus Oklahoma, he scored 30 points against them. Then against the Mobley brothers, he scored 23. In that matchup, like, he's really been good, man. And for the women, the hottest team I have South Carolina, you know, the All-American post player, Aaliyah Boston, who's the best center in the women's college game. And I think personally that has she been eligible for this year's NBA draft, I mean WNBA draft, she's the number one pick, y'all, for real. She's been amazing on the low block. South Carolina as a team, they have been amazing as well themselves. You know, they're really great at running teams off the three-point line. You know, and I was looking up the stats today on herhoopstats.com. Actually, go check that out. They have really dope content on there, herhoopstats.com. I was on that site. And the lady Gamecocks, you know, they really have held their opponents to less than a point per scoring attempt this entire season. So that defensive intensity, that effort can really help their chances on winning that national championship and stuff. You know what I mean? So, yeah, those are my two teams. The vulnerable teams, though, I think, on the women's side, I think it's Arizona. You know what I mean? They're in the Final Four, but they're I think that with they only have one All-American. You know what I'm saying? And I like her. Ari McDonald, we're talking about. You know what I'm saying? But it's just, this is gonna be too much firepower. So that's why I say for their team, Arizona is the most vulnerable. And for the men's side, you know what? It's tough because I feel like, you know, UCLA, I think that their time has come. Like I said, with, you know, Gonzaga making it look really easy and the way they've been playing and stuff. And UCLA have been playing really good, too. They beat number one Michigan to get to this position right here. I mean, they beat number one Michigan to get to this position right here. But I just think that right now the other teams is really strong. Like Baylor's strong, Houston's strong defensively and everything like that. So that's my vulnerable team right there, UCLA. Go ahead, K-Dot.
Yeah, so on the women's side, I'm gonna go the opposite route. So for the most vulnerable, surprisingly, I think it's Stanford. We look at the Sweet 16 game they had against Oklahoma State. They allowed Oklahoma State to just stick around. But, of course, fortunately for Stanford, they shot the three ball well, and they were able to pull away from that game late. And then we look at the Louisville game the other night, and Louisville in the third quarter was up as much as 9 points. And, you know, Stanford came back, and, you know, the bench player that came in, if I'm not mistaken, I think her name, her last name is Prechtel. She came in, scored like 17 points. She was, I believe she was like four for five or four for six from three. And they were able to pull away from that game. But I just feel like, you know, at the number one overall seed, if I'm not mistaken, I think they were, you know, they're coming in very vulnerable, and then they're coming into a very hot South Carolina team that has pushed the envelope throughout the entire tourney. I think their closest game is probably against Georgia Tech. So in the Sweet 16, and that game was still won by like 13 or between 13 and 15 points. So, you know, I believe that they're the hottest team coming in. So, you know, on the men's side, I think the hottest team is, of course, obviously Gonzaga. With that offense that Mark Few has put together, with the personnel that he has on that floor, it's darn near impossible to not say that they're the hottest team. I mean, they by an average of 17 and a half points per game on a margin level. That's, you know, really impressive. And then, you know, my most vulnerable team is the one that you talked about, is UCLA. I mean, coming in as an 11 seed, being in the first four to make it to the Final Four. They are the 11th seed, and, you know, I think the Cinderella might catch up to them. So, you know, that's what I think. And, you know, hopefully even regardless, you know, I think the Final Four matchup for both the women's and the men's side is going to be very intriguing. The biggest Final Four for the women's side would be the Stanford South Carolina game. And then I would probably say the Battle of Texas in on the men's side with Baylor and Houston to see who's the real king of Texas on that side. So it's going to be really exciting, but those are my hot and most vulnerable teams for both the men and the women's side.
So I'm going to go with the most vulnerable first. I agree with UCLA. I just think it's hard to have to play almost flawless basketball, you know, in every round because you're the less talented team. You know, Juzang is on a historic run and it's been dope to see, you know, especially after his exit at Kentucky. But I just think they're outgunned at this point and the fatigue is going to start to hit them, man. You know, they've been in every type of game that you could possibly be in. And they've, you know, hung around, but you know, when that Grim Reaper taps you on the shoulder, man, it's time to go. And then on the women's side, I think Arizona, man, you know, Ari McDonald is amazing, but you know, we know it takes more than one player, you know, and I think we're going to see her definitely go out, you know, in a blaze of glory firing, and it's going to be fun to watch, but just too much talent on the other side. And hottest teams, Gonzaga, definitely, man. I mean, that's a team that's got, you know, three, maybe four guys that I wouldn't be surprised to, you know, see playing in the pros not too long from now. And, you know, they're just too deep. Like, even if Jalen Suggs is having an off night, you know, they have a war-tested veteran point guard off the bench and Nembhard that played in the SEC. You know, it's just too much firepower, man. It's going to be tough. You can stop one guy, but you still got four other guys that's going to be lighting you up. And then on the women's side, I think the way that South Carolina has been played, it's allowed, you know, Zaya Cook to heat up while teams are really, you know, keying in on Aaliyah Boston. And that's dangerous because the type of game Aaliyah plays, you know, she can get hers really whenever, but you know, Zaya getting it going, that's a scary situation, man. And we've seen she's got elite space creation, and when that jumper is falling, you know, the other team is in for a long night.
Yeah, I agree. Let's talk about this Baylor versus UConn game. Really good game, man. One of the most classic games of the year, man. But, you know, we got to talk about that controversial foul, you know, that foul, that non-foul call, which was an obvious foul. You know what I mean? It's the reason why UConn is at the Final Four for the 13th consecutive time. You know, let's talk about it. I'll break it down. 5 seconds left in the game. The Dejanay Carrington, you know, she got fouled by two Husky players. I think it was Leah Edwards and Olivia Nelson-Odota. You know what I mean? When she went up for that shot, no foul was called. And, you know, UConn, they got the ball back. And I think it was Christian Williams that got fouled. And, like, it was just over after that, man. Like, that was crazy. Like, even, like, everybody on social media was talking about it. You know, LeBron was like, that's a foul and stuff. And a lot of WNBA players, like, you know, Skylar Diggins-Smith and Chrissy Tolliver, et cetera, was pretty much, you know, saying that it was a foul. And even – Gina Orima's daughter tweeted like that should have been a foul as well. So, you know, starting with you, Lawrence, man, what you thinking about that last play? Because I kind of felt like it kind of put a little damper on the tournament a little bit.
Yeah, I definitely felt like it was a play that was missed. It was a pretty blatant one, like you said, and I just think it overall affected things going forward a little bit. I mean, you would at least want to see them get their fair chance, you know. When it comes down to the obvious calls, we can't miss them. Even with replay, you can't miss a foul like that. So, I don't know. I feel like it was a tough break. It was a really tough break for Baylor.
Yeah, I do agree. It was a blatant foul. But I will say this, the referees were swallowing the whistle the entire night, to be honest with you. If we go a couple possessions before that, Kristen Williams had a fast break and was clearly fouled. And she made the layup, obviously, but I mean, she was clearly fouled. But one thing that I want to talk about in regards to that game is how DeeDee Richards went down when they were up now with the hamstring injury. That turned that game around entirely. And that was the turning point of UConn's 19-0 run that they went, you know, after that happened. And even though they swallowed their whistles all night, you can't allow, as Baylor, you can't allow yourself to be in that position for the referees to make a call like that, especially when you had the momentum. I think from an X's and O's perspective, Kim Mulkey kind of shriveled up a little bit. She was unable to sustain the run. I don't believe she even called the timeout until UConn went up to capitalize on that 19-0 run. So, you know, there were a lot of factors that that led to that last possession. And unfortunately, it didn't go Baylor's way. But at the same time, you know, you have to consider what happened in the game earlier. And I do believe that, you know, with DeeDee Richards going down, it would have been definitely different. Nelissa was having a very good third quarter. She was even hitting jumpers at that point. And, you know, once DeeDee went down, they stopped going to her. And Dejanay just kind of took everything in her hands, or at least tried to, as you saw in that final possession. But just to just summarize everything, I mean, again, I don't believe you should allow that possession to take place, you know, and let the refs determine the game like that, even though it was a blatant foul. I'm not saying it wasn't, but if you look at the events that occurred prior and what led up to that possession, honestly, Baylor had it in the bag. I think UConn didn't have an answer. And then DeeDee Richards go down and the rest is history. But yeah, very controversial call, but you know, you have to play the game, and UConn has advanced. So, you know, it is what it is at that point.
Yeah, that's a fact. It definitely is what it is. But we also got to talk about this, KDOT, man. We got to talk about the University of Texas, man. You know what I'm saying? They went scoreless in the fourth quarter of an Elite Eight game with the projected number one player, Charlie Collier, on the team, right? It actually started before that, KDOT. It started with a minute and 48 left in the third quarter, right? They missed 20 straight shots. I mean, you literally got the number one projected player, the best player in the country that everybody said coming in was in there. And then she only took, I think she only took two shots during that whole entire span, man. So, and me and you was like, we didn't know how to approach it because we also know how, like, you know, right now that the women's basketball game is getting a lot more eyes on it. And, you know, you see a lot of people like, just let it play out, let it be what it be. But I'm just saying, like, for the simple fact of, you know, just the competition of the game and stuff like that, you know, we got to hold players accountable, whether you're playing in the NBA or the WNBA, men's college basketball or women's college basketball, we got to hold you accountable. You know what I'm saying? So, like, my thoughts was, like, that's not what a projected number one draft pick should do. You know what I'm saying? Regardless of however the defense is, you know, you don't take two shots, you know what I mean, from a minute and 48 left in the third quarter and for the rest of the game. You know what I'm saying? So I kind of didn't like that. And the way a Leah Boston, you know, kind of exposed, you know, Charlie Collier a lot. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think you were saying it too as well, how she can't really move lateral like that. You know what I'm saying? And that, you know, when the NBA draft hits on April 15th, that she should actually be selected number two or whatever, just so, you know, hey, this is a wake-up call for you. You was supposed to perform and you didn't and stuff like that. So, you know, KDOT, what's your thoughts, brother?
Yeah, man. You know, I was highly critical on Charlotte Collier coming in. I was highly critical in that game against Maryland. I mean, even though you'll look at the stats, she had 16 points, 10 rebounds in that Maryland game. that doesn't paint the whole story. Gotta watch the film, gotta watch the game. You know, she was very slow getting onto the block and turning her shoulder to seal and post. She doesn't have a over the shoulder left hook, doesn't have an over the shoulder right hook. She's just 6'5". I mean, I hate to be critical of Charlie, but I mean, she's just 6'5". You know, she has very slow feet, and a lot of that is going to have to improve. You know, I mean, we're 2 weeks away from the draft, and I know development is key, you know, when it comes to some of these draft picks. But at this point, if you're supposed to be the projected number one overall pick and you have a performance like you had in the tournament, you know, that's something to think about. That's something for the scouts to look at. And for Charlie, I mean, it's just unfortunate that she was, you know, she only put up two shot attempts, you know, at the end of the third, going all the way into the fourth quarter. You know, that's unacceptable, especially as a projected number one overall pick. But I'm going to say this, Vic Schaefer was, he's not the best at development big men. We saw it with Tia McGowan's at Mississippi State. Fortunately, she was able to, pick up a deal and get drafted to the Indiana Fever. But, you know, all she was a big body, you know, 6'6", 6'7", just rebounding the ball and, you know, giving it to her wing players and rim running. That's all she was. And it was it's basically the same thing with Charlie. You know, Charlie has a big body. You know, she could rebound. She's very aggressive when she wants to be, especially, you know, on the defensive end. But, you know, we missed the mechanics, you know, on the offensive end. You know, there were many times where I'm yelling at the TV, seal, post, turn. I kept yelling, seal, post, turn. You're 6'5". You know, so with Charlie, I mean, that, you know, that's something that she's definitely going to have to work on. But I'm not going to just say that about Charlie. I will commend South Carolina on their impeccable defense. They locked in. And the most impressive thing about that is they did all of that in the half court setting. It wasn't a press. It wasn't a three quarter court. It wasn't a half court. There weren't no traps or anything. This was legit half court defense. And that's the identity of Dawn Staley. And that has been the identity of South Carolina for a long time. This is probably arguably, if not last year, some of their most potent offense that you've seen in a South Carolina team. So for them to do it on the defensive end and allow Texas to only score 34 points total in that game is mightily impressive. And, you know, big, big kudos to Dawn Staley and the way she was able to execute that. And kudos to the women that played the game, that actually played the defense to make it happen. I mean, that's history we're talking about. 0 points in the fourth quarter, zero, and you are a Division I Power 5 NCAA team. That's impressive.
Yeah, I agree. They really locked them down. And sticking with the women, we're going to talk about Ari McDonald's big game versus Indiana, getting them to the Final Four, her Arizona team. 33 points, you know, after scoring 37 points in the first two rounds, like, she's just been on a tear. She scored 64 points total in the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight, man. I kind of think that UConn can have her hands full, can have their hands full with Ari, man, because she's so quick. She has a quick release, and then she could go off for like points in a flurry, 12 to 15 points, like real quick, man. You know what I'm saying? So what's your thoughts on Ari McDonald?
Yeah, with Ari, I mean, she's impressive. I mean, it's one thing about Ari scoring the way she does, but she also covers over 35% of Arizona's possessions. So just like you said, I mean, she's leading the team in points, assists, and steals. So for her to be doing that, I mean, it's incredible. She can score the ball in so many ways. And what's going to have to happen for Arizona to win this game is definitely going to be Ari, but it's also going to have to be, you know, a team effort in trying to get her open. Because everybody knows the scout report is going to say Ari McDonald is the person to go to. we need to make sure she is stopped. So, you know, the most important thing for Arizona is to make sure that that they figure out ways, figure out different schemes to get her the ball. It's also going to be something defensively. And guess what? Ari McDonald, once again, she sets the tone defensively. And what happens when she sets the tone on defense, Arizona just excels from one end of the court to another. And for them, I think they ranked sixth in defensive ratings with all of the teams that were coming in to that Sweet 16 / Elite Eight series. With that being said, is going to create something that's going to be really interesting because Paige is not only good on the ball, Paige is good off the ball. So the question is going to be, who is Ari going to guard, even though she's going to have the offensive load? I mean, is she going to try to take a challenge at Paige and make sure Paige is slowed down, what type of team defense is Arizona going to try to use to try to slow UConn down as a whole? Because I mean, it's just Ari McDonald over there on Arizona. And that's no disrespect to her teammates, but when you got Ari McDonald on one end with Arizona, I mean, you have Paige, you have Kristen, you have Aaliyah. Like it's so many players on UConn's side, that can score, especially with Kristen Williams. I mean, I think it's understood that Kristen is the secondary scorer behind Paige on that UConn team. So the question is, how are you going to stop both Paige and Kristen? It's going to be very interesting to watch. I loved seeing Ari McDonald play that 30-point game going into the Elite Eight. She tied her coach it wasn't the exact score, but she was the first person since her coach to score 30 plus in an Elite Eight game going into a Final Four. So that was very impressive. So it's going to be exciting to watch. Again, I think that Arizona, I will probably predict it to a point where Arizona comes out firing hot in the first quarter, and then UConn just settles in and ends up pulling away for a victory.
Yeah, don't give away the predictions yet. We got to get to the predictions, brother.
I'm sorry. I got excited.
I know, right? It's so many good games, but it's actually really, really dope just actually covering, the women's basketball tournament, man. It really has been fun, but can't forget about Louisville versus Stanford, man, because Stanford was down. You know what I'm saying? They looked like they was down and about to go home. They trailed at halftime. Nice. I think it was 38-26 at halftime. Then, they went on a crazy run to get within two. I think it was 50-48 going into the fourth quarter. Then all of a sudden, that 3-point barrage they put on, you had, players like Ashton Pretchell, who we actually going to talk about because, she just lit up. You know what I'm saying? And, just her at her size, at 6'5", being able to shoot like that out there. She was looking like Lauren Jackson, y'all. You know what I'm saying? Like from the old Seattle Storm days, Lauren Jackson. She was really special. Then everybody started hitting the threes. Anna Wilson hitting the three. Do you see Russell Wilson, NFL player, rooting on his sister and stuff with his wife? Like that was so dope, man. And but also the unsung hero of this game was Fran Belibi. I hope I'm saying her name right. She was on the offensive boards, man, like really just keeping this team in the game, man, when the game looked like it was out of reach, man. So, K-Dot, what was your thoughts on the Louisville, versus Stanford and stuff like that? Also, shout out to Dana Evans too. She had a great game. She scored 24 points. She just declared for the WNBA draft too as well. Can't forget about her. Very, very, very special player, man. I think that she's a top 3, top 5, draft pick coming up on April 15th. So definitely looking forward to seeing, her career and stuff. So K-Dot, what you was thinking about this Louisville versus Stanford game?
Yeah, that was a very, very impressive game because one thing that I want to mention that after the half, Stanford outscored Louisville 52-25 in the final 20 minutes. And what was impressive about that is Ashton Pretchell, as you said, she came off the bench and I kind of tried to freestyle it earlier, but I want to give you the correct numbers. She added 16 points on 6-for-6 shooting.
Crazy.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
And that's what happened in the second half. The shooting ended up opening up, and you only get better shooting when you have great offensive rebounding. And Fran did that. We all know in basketball, the deadliest three to make is a three off of an offensive rebound. So with that being said, Stanford did an amazing job, offensively in the second half. They had it to where, like, Louisville was just making, the right reads, making the right passes in the first half, and they couldn't figure it out. And, they finally settled in. They were able to grab the offensive rebounds, and Louisville went away from their motion offense, and they just went one-on-one. And salute to Dana Evans, because she had a phenomenal game. But, I think that started the demise when they started going one-on-one. And, Stanford was able to pull away from that game. So, that's the most impressive thing that I saw in that Stanford-Louisville game. Williams, their point guard, she was phenomenal in the second half. She always starts off slow for some reason, but she comes back with a vengeance in the second half, and she definitely did that. And I want to say kudos to her, but the definite X factor was Ashton Pretchell. I mean, coming off the bench and doing what she did, that's really the main reason why Stanford was able to pull off the win and make it to the Final Four.
Yeah, Ashton Pretchell was super dope, man. But before we move on to the men's bracket, man, we got to talk about the social media impact the women's basketball tournaments so far has had over the men's. You know what I mean? Like, out of the top 10 most followed players from the men's and women's bracket, 8 of them are women, man. Like, so Kata, like, what's your thoughts on, the women's impact on the social media side? Women has been clearly dominating this tournament, bro.
Yeah, they really have. And what's most impressive is that, it's the TikToks. I mean, yeah. you go all over social media, you go to the TikToks. I mean, you've got the coaches involved, you got the players involved. I mean, everybody is following, their favorite player, on TikTok, and that's definitely spearheaded that. But I really want to say that people are paying attention because of the obvious disparity that we've been talking about between the men and the women's game. I mean, we talked about it in our last show. The women can't even carry the March Madness trademark on their floors or anywhere. The swag bags, I mean, we saw that. And if it wasn't for, I can't remember her name, but she plays for Oregon. If it wasn't for her, mentioning, the obscene amount of space that they had for them to only have a dumbbell rack, I think that's what really sparked the whole social media influence. And, it's definitely amazing that, you have people out here paying attention to how fly these women are on the court as well as off the court. Because, like I said, I mean, without mentioning the disparities that they've been going through, I mean, it probably would have been swept under the rug and nobody would have been talking about it. But for them to step up and speak out on it as they always do, and more power to our women for doing that. It's gotten to a point where, from a social media perspective, everybody is following and everybody is engaged. And, it's a beautiful thing for that to occur, because, we in the age of social media, we in the age of a situation where if you can't get it on TV, you can get it on the internet. And they've been doing a great job at doing that.
Yeah, I agree. It's been a clear win for the women's, on the social media point right there, for real. Just a lot of dope games and stuff like that. And, they can hold their own in this world, man. You know what I'm saying? So it's definitely a spot, going forward in the future when it's time for these revenue dollars to hit, so these women could get, more money. You know what I'm saying? Get more eyes on them and everything too, as well. Let's move on. Let's transition to the men's bracket side of things, man. Let's talk about Houston's elite defense, man. They've been, shutting it down, man, suffocating everybody, man. That's how they've been winning. You know what I'm saying? Trusting in themselves, trusting in the coach, Kelvin Sampson, who could have been an NBA coach, but decided to go to the University of Houston. And then now look, you know what I mean, what they're doing and stuff like that, man. Like what they did to Houston, Lawrence, was crazy, man. What's your thoughts on the University of Houston's defense, brother?
I feel like it's honestly a full court blitz. They love to press early and often, especially after makes. And they have that type of lineup where they have the 2 to 3 athletic guys who can just, the wings especially, who can just roam around the floor, play the passing lanes, get the steals, and go out on the fast break. They like to get up and down. And we've seen that first round, even with Cleveland State, as they progressed on, they showed you that they could persevere through close games. I really think they're the dangerous type of team when it comes down to crunch time, because they've been in all types of games. You have a veteran coach who I would like to shout out as well, Kelvin Sampson, who's taken two different teams to the Final Four. And I think he's one of 5 coaches to ever do anything like that. So they're a very dangerous team, man.
So Houston, man, it's amazing to see what they're able to do, you know, as a team on the defensive side of the floor, man. Like, and I want to shout out, I know Quentin Grimes has kind of been the one getting all the draft buzz, but I want to shout out Giroux on that team. He's just kind of their Swiss Army knife, their do-it-all guy. You know, triple-double threat. And he just does whatever is needed, man, to get his team to victory. And I think he's a huge key in what they're able to do with his versatility. And I think, you know, he'll be a big performer for them in his Final Four matchup as well.
All right, let's talk about UCLA from the first four to the Final Four. You know what I mean? From the original blue blood college teams, you know, all the way down to Cinderella status now. You know what I'm saying? So back to you, Will. What's your thoughts on, you know, UCLA's run?
UCLA's run is a very memorable one, man. As you can see, we were discussing it a little bit in the clubhouse room we did yesterday. Just going from the play-in to the Final Four, man, I can't think of a time that we've seen a run of this magnitude. And, I mean, the fact that they're even considered a Cinderella now is a story in itself. You know, it shows kind of the program's fall from grace. And I have to give some credit to Mick Cronin, because when he got hired, I honestly didn't think that he would do as well as he's done there. You know, he got those guys to buy in, and they have a grittiness about them, kind of reminiscent of his old Cincinnati teams. So it's dope to see, man. As much as I think they might be out of there on Saturday, you know, I'm rooting for them at the same time, because this is an amazing run.
Yeah, I feel similar, man. Like I say, just me naturally, I'm a big fan of underdogs. So to see them go from first four all the way to Final Four is amazing. You know, that program has been through quite a bit. You know, they've had a couple transfers. They even had guys who've come back from injuries, and Tiger Campbell, you know, things of that nature. So to see them make it back to their historical prominence, man, it's a beautiful thing to see. And who doesn't like a Cinderella in the NCAA tournament? It makes the storyline a little bit better, you know. But for the two main guys to step up scoring, for them to grit it out with Michigan in that 51-49 victory to make it to the Final Four, I'm just happy for the story, man. The Cinderella shows that hard work definitely beats talent when the talent doesn't work hard, and they're keeping guys on notice. So I definitely think they'll give Gonzaga their best shot, and I just want to see a great game overall.
Yeah, you know, most importantly, I mean, this UCLA team, as everyone said, from first four to the Final Four, one of the most impressive things, and Johnny Juzang, man, that's an amazing talent. Coming from a spot-up shooter in Kentucky to now putting in kind of like a full arsenal at UCLA, and then with Tiger Campbell being, you know, the illustrious point guard that he's been. I believe he came from La Lumiere. And it's just amazing to see that team thrive the way they've been doing, and they've been doing it on both ends. We saw the end of that Michigan game where they were able to sustain – the three-point shooting of Wagner on both of those possessions. I mean, that was very very impressive. But for them to make the run that they made, it's been highly impressive. And you know, again, you know, I hope you see a great game between Gonzaga and UCLA. We've said it before, we'll continue to say it. One of the original Blue Bloods, you know, the John Wooden days, even going back to the days of Jordan Farmar, Aaron Aflalo, you know, when they made that Final Four national championship run, you know, back in the mid-2000s. And then you can even talk about the Ed O'Bannon days. So, you know, it's a very impressive way to get back to the Final Four. And everybody talked about Mick Cronin and when he first got the position. It was like, what? Really? Mick Cronin? But now he's Final Four bound and he's there. So, you know, I guess what can they say now? But very impressive by UCLA. And, you know, definitely good luck to them going into the game against Gonzaga, because that's I hope that it's an exciting one. They've been in games where they've had your heart beating very fast. So they won't be afraid of the moment.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And finally, let's move on to our Final Four predictions. You know, who's going to be the national champions? Let's start with the women's bracket first. We have Stanford versus South Carolina. And then on the other side of the bracket, we have UConn versus Arizona. Starting with KDOT, let's keep it simple. Who you got going to the national championship game and who you got winning it all? Let's go.
South Carolina. I think that South Carolina is going to come out just like Louisville did, but they're going to sustain their lead. And then in the national championship game, I got them going against UConn, and it's going to be a rematch of the January matchup where they lost in overtime with Paige Beckers going off in the second half. It won't be so much Paige Beckers this time. I think Destiny Henderson is going to be the X factor in both games. She plays very well in big tournament moments, and this would be her one shining moment this time around, even though Zaya Cook and Aaliyah Boston has been doing it up offensively for that squad. But Destiny Hendo Henderson is going to be the X factor for both of those squads. So South Carolina hoists the trophy and cuts the Nets down for the national championship.
South Carolina, man, is first of all, I got to give kudos, man, to Dawn Staley. You know, I've been a fan of hers for a long time, from her being a player and even coaching Temple. I just think that certain coaches have a great ability not only to, you know, do the X's and O's, but really put their imprint on a team. And you can see Dawn, you know, all over this South Carolina team, man. You know, they play with a toughness and a swagger that no matter what, whether they're up or down, you know, they're just coming at you. And it was a few games this year where they took their foot off the gas, but I believe that they're focused. I believe that they feel all the hype that UConn is getting and some of the other teams. And, you know, similar to kind of what Baylor was feeling, you know, up until Dede went down. And, you know, they're here, man, you know, and they won another championship. And I think that they have a special 1-2 punch, you know, with Zaya Cook and Aaliyah Boston, man. And I just feel like it's going to be tough to stop, man. You know, I'm not sure if, you know, they'll be able to pull it off, you know, and win the whole thing. But if they did, it wouldn't shock me one bit, man, because this is a truly special team.
Yeah. Overall, I would have to go with UConn in a close one. I just can't go against the tradition, man. I can't go against that special freshman of the year / player of the year, Paige Beukers. It's a tough one to go against her. Geno Auriemma and his Dawn Staley has truly built a great foundation at South Carolina. definitely have to give her her flowers because she did that. This one here, I would have to go with UConn. I would have to say
this is a tough bracket, man. It's funny. I think that we know that UConn is going to just roll over Arizona, and it's sad for me to say that, but I think that it is going to be an easy win for UConn. But man, you know, with Stanford though, that's going to be a tough game because that's just basically like, you know, you got the post game with a layup Boston versus the 3-point shooting of Stanford and stuff like that. And we've seen what happens if Stanford, you know, get hot and you got, you know, Ashton Pretchell who can step out and take, you know, a layup Boston outside, man. And, you know, and if you got Fran Bleavy down there, you know, grabbing those offensive rebounds and stuff like that, like it could be trouble, man. So that's going to be tough. So I'm going to go with Stanford going to the national championship game. And then I'm going to have Stanford beating UConn, and Stanford will be a national champions. When we have this podcast again, we are going to see Stanford as a national champions, y'all. Let's move on to the men's bracket. We got Gonzaga versus UCLA, Baylor versus Houston. KDOT, man, let's keep it short and sweet, man. What we got right now, man? Who you got coming out?
Man, my bracket all messed up anyway, so I'm going with the juggler. I'm going with the upset. Nah, technically not an upset, but I'm going Houston over Baylor, Gonzaga over UCLA, Gonzaga over Houston. My score will be 89-78.
Okay, go ahead, Will. Let's keep it quick. Let's see what you got, Will. What's up?
On the men's side, I'm going Baylor versus Gonzaga, the best game of the season that we didn't get to see the first time because of COVID, and I'm going with Gonzaga. Man, they just got too much on their side.
All right, Lawrence. Well, what you got?
Well, for me, I know that, you know, I feel like Gonzaga is definitely going to be in the championship game. The Texas duel is going to be a great one to watch. Honestly, it's a split for me in the Texas game. I really think Baylor or Houston could come away with it. But in the end, I want to see something different. I want to see something different personally. I would like to see Houston pull off the upset against Gonzaga, but I feel like this is Gonzaga's year. Yeah, it's their destiny. There's nothing you could write against it. They have the perfect team aligned, coach back. They've ran the table, and I just think this is theirs to lose.
That's crazy because I'm going with the Cinderella, y'all. Okay? this is the NCAA show. This ain't real basketball talk. No hot takes, yo. You know what? I just think that I'ma just be the devil's advocate, man, and just go with UCLA, man. For some reason, man, I just have a great feeling about UCLA, yo. I think that that UCLA is going to come out, man, and just shock the world, man. You know what I'm saying? So I'm gonna do it, and then I'm gonna go with Houston over Baylor. Because you know what? I even had Houston winning it anyway. After just watching their defense, man, like their defense is elite. When you got those long, lanky athletes like that that can cover ground when you're trying to make cross-court passes, the way they press and stuff, like I got Houston, you know, winning it anyway over Baylor. You know what I'm saying? And as far for the national championship game, that's going to be tough. So I got UCLA versus Houston. And, man, I think that's just going to be the Cinderella's year, man. You know, I'm a ride with the Cinderella's this year, man. And I'm going to just go say, hey, you know, UCLA. So when we have this podcast mid first week of April, you know what I'm saying? I'm going to have one. I'm going to have Stanford winning it all. I'm staying in California with UCLA winning it all. That's my final score. I'm putting it in the box right now. Let's get it.
Hey, that's a tough pick right there, man. If UCLA wins it all, I would love to see it too, man.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm ready to make it happen and stuff, man. Let's go UCLA, let's go Stanford and stuff. And before we get out of here, shout outs to Dawn Staley and Adair Bonds for being the first two black people to coach in the Final Four. So, you know, shout out to that. That's pretty dope, y'all. You know what I mean? Salute to all this stuff. It's 2021. We should have been had this, but you know what? We'll take it where we can get it, right? With that being said, let's get on out of here. Thank you for listening to the NCAA show with the panel of 265 Media Podcast Network. For KDOT, for Will, for Lawrence, and for the producer of the show today, JC. I'm Daniel Artes. Love is love. And with that being said, we are out of here.